Like you said, my name's Tal Dreary. I'm a PT up at Summer Creek. I worked the last 4 years at the Ironman Clinic in the Med Center under Mark Addicts. And so I kind of cut my teeth working with those guys and learning a lot about hip mobility, label chairs, and post-op label reconstruction. I updated a couple of slides, so if you need any more, if you want this presentation, feel free to email me. If you have any questions, my email is right there. I don't have any disclosures. Our objectives today are going to just kind of touch on the anatomy, biomechanics, a little bit about pathomechanics, what FAI and labral pathology is and how it presents. We're going to try to understand some of the special tests and then how to apply it to our athlete. Mobility issues of the hip. When we're thinking about that, things that come to mind, I think about tightness, weakness, bony structure, and mechanics. All these things tie in to the hip. And when you put all that together, you get this really long word called femoral acetabular impingement. Exactly. So what it is, it's been described in the literature as one of the most common hip pathologies or common causes of hip pain for our young athletes. I like to think of it as a shoulder impingement of the hip, and we'll discuss that. It's basically the contact of the bones in the hip, so early contact of the femur and the acetabulum, and then what that does to the labrum in between them. So here we have a picture of the pelvis, and you can see the purple rim here is actually the labrum. That's what deepens the socket, and whenever you flex your hip up, you get impingement. This is the site of impingement right here where the labrum kind of gets chewed up. And this typically happens with flexion, internal rotation, and adduction. Real quickly, the bony anatomy, we got the acetabulum, which is actually where three parts of the pelvis fuse together by about age 8. The orientation, as we know from anatomy, is going to be laterally, inferiorly, and a little bit anterior. An interior portion of the acetabulum is covered with articular cartilage. The head and neck of the femur, which articulates with the acetabulum, is oriented anteriorly, superiorly, and medially. We have the greater trochanter and the lesser trochanter. These are sites for a lot of muscle attachments, which are really important when it comes to the hip, especially the greater trochanter, where our lateral rotators of the hip insert. And then we have the labrum, which is a fibrocartilage substance. Like I said, it deepens the socket, this enhances stability, and creates that intra-articular negative pressure to help keep the bone in the socket. So what causes FAI? Well, a lot of things, and it could be a combination of all of them, or it could be a little bit of each. But the main thing that I think about is there could be some bony deformations that happen throughout puberty or throughout developmental stages. You could have some muscle or capsular dysfunction, and then pelvic control, which I think is something that we can help in our patients or our athletes. So let's talk about the bony structures. Normal anteversion, or the angle of the neck in relation to the shaft of the femur. If you have somebody laying flat on their back, you measure the angle through the neck, that's going to give you their angle of inclination. Normal athletes or normal asymptomatic population have about 8 to 15 degrees. That's considered normal. Whenever someone develops more anteversion or excessive anteversion greater than 15 degrees, we call that excessive anteversion. And then someone with less anteversion, which is termed retroversion, which is a misnomer because it actually does not project into the negative, it's actually just less anteversion. We're going to discuss this a lot more than we're going to discuss the angle of inclination, but real quickly, normal angle between the shaft of the femur and the neck should be about 125 to 130. If you have less than that, we call that coxa vara. More than that, coxa valga. When you have something like this, it's really bad because your weight bearing in a single leg is not meant to be put through an angle like this. You can have a lot of shear forces that can fracture the neck of the femur. One thing also to consider is that when you have something like this, the glute medius is attached at that greater trochanter, and when you have it in that shortened position from where it comes off the pelvis, it puts it at a disadvantage, a mechanical disadvantage. So it's another pathology that comes along with these types of things. All right, so let's look at anteversion real quickly. Normal anteversion up here at the top, we said it's between 8 and 15. when we have excessive animadversion, I want you just to think about, this is somebody on their back, we want to internally rotate that leg around the pelvis. You can see that from this point to this point is increased now. So they're going to have improved or greater internal rotation with somebody with excessive animadversion. And as you can probably guess, external rotation is going to be limited. So these are the patients or athletes that you don't want to try to force external rotation. They're just going to be banging bone on bone, and it's going to be really painful, and you're not going to get any improvements in range of motion, and they're going to get frustrated, and you are too. So if you're able to assess them correctly and realize that they have this excessive animadversion, then you'll avoid that headache. People with retroversion, on the other hand, are going to be the opposite. You can see that they have a little bit less room than you would on their normal antiversion to come around and internally rotate that hip, and then with their external rotation, they're going to have a little bit more. So what happens with retroversion? Ito and colleagues in 2001 wanted to see, do people with retroversion have label pathology, and what happens with that? So they took 24 patients with hip pain and paired them with 24 patients without hip pain, and they looked at the acetabulum and the impingement, and they found that the average angle in patients with labral tears was actually 9.7 degrees. And like we said up here, less than 8 is considered retroversion. And so the patients that didn't have any symptoms, they had an angle of inclination of almost 16. So the more you put them into that lesser antiversion, it's going to put them at a higher risk of developing labral pathology or intra-articular pathology. So how do we assess for angle of inclination? We all know the Craig's test. You lie your athlete in prone, and then you bring their knee through, their hip into internal and external rotation as you palpate the greater trochanter, and you try to find the most prominent point. At this point, when you determine that it's at its most prominent, you can consider that it's parallel to the table, and now you take a measurement between this perpendicular point to the table with the shaft of the femur, and that is your angle. So, like we said, greater than 15, you've got excessive antiversion, and then less than 8, you're considered retroversion. Favors is another good tool to use. It won't tell you the angle of inclination, but you will be able to assess how well their hip can fall towards the table. So if they have hip mobility issues, you're going to see that. So this is a negative Favors test. So this is normal. She's not grabbing her hip like she is in this angle. And for some reason, he's smiling. So you can see that her knee's not dropping all the way down. Her hand is grabbing. Apparently, it's not very comfortable. And he's cranking on her and smiling. And that's a positive Favors test. Some other bony changes. We got normal bone here. This is the neck of the femur, the head into the acetabulum. These points up here and down here, that's the rim where the labrum deepens the socket. With B, we call this a cam lesion. So this lesion that grows on the neck of the femur. You can tell it's not, the neck isn't as narrow as it used to be. Now when you flex that hip, you're gonna come into contact with that labral rim earlier. And if you're trying to force that, or if you're in a sport where you need to be in a squatted position, then that's just going to chew up that labrum or cause some irritation of the anterior superior labrum. Up here, this is called a pincer lesion. It's actually a bony growth on the outside of the acetabulum. Same type of deal. When you try to lift your or flex your hip, you're going to come into contact with that. And then the lucky individuals who hit the lottery actually have two. That is a recipe for disaster. You typically have to go in and get that trimmed off in surgery. Here's another picture of what a pincer can look like in a cam lesion. The C sign is something that is being discussed in the literature, and I don't know any statistics or validation of this, but this is how the patients will come into you. They grab their hip above the greater trochanter and they complain of deep pain. And we just turn this to C sign because it seems to happen all the time. They also may present to you in this lean back position because they don't want to flex over that hip and they don't want to put weight through there. So your athletes, if they're coming to you and they're saying that it hurts, you may want to think about hip labral pathology. A couple of tests to test for labrum or FAI. I like to start with the log roll test. For one, it's the only test that we have that is considered to be somewhat specific, meaning that if it's positive, if you get a positive test, then you can actually rule in hip labral pathology or intra-articular pathology. So having the athlete lay supine completely in neutral, just relax there, and then you roll their knee and their hip internal, and then you roll it external. And if they complain of pain when it goes completely to end range internal, then you can consider that a positive log roll test. Fader is flexion, adduction, and internal rotation. So you flex that hip to 90 degrees, internally rotate them to end range, and then adduct them about 15 degrees. Basically, what you're doing is you're closing off that joint, and you're approximating the two bones together. So if there's anything that's inflamed in between them, you're going to set it off. This is a more sensitive test, meaning if you get a negative on this and they're not painful, then you can pretty confidently rule out that they have something going on in the intra-articular labrum or intra-articular hip pathology. Another test, a resistant straight leg raise test. This one is something that's kind of anecdotal. We like to use it in clinic. One author said that it is pretty sensitive, but there's not very much research to back it up. But you basically have them lift up their leg, keep it like straight leg raise, resist them. If they complain of pain in the anterior part of their hip, you're thinking hip flexor pathology, anterior capsule pathology, something's irritating in there. All right, so Capron et al. In 2015 wanted to see the biomechanics of the hip, where they took volunteers and symptomatic patients during an impingement, a passive impingement test, meaning flexion, adduction, internal rotation, like we said, the faders. And they wanted to see how far that they can get the joint angles, and they calculated that compared to asymptomatic subjects, femoral acetabular impingement patients have decreased adduction, internal rotation during an impingement exam, and more flexion and less adduction in favors, meaning they have a worse favors presentation. So it's saying that basically when you have some sort of pathology or hip pain, it's going to limit their range of motion and give them this early onset of impingement or early onset of pain in their range of motion. How many of you guys have seen the squatty potty on Shark Tank? It's in Bed Bath & Beyond, and they're making millions of dollars off of the step stool that basically put under your feet when you're taking a deuce. Yeah. But it's basically coming about because there's a big movement now that sitting on a toilet is not putting your rectum at the correct angle when you're pooping, and so it's putting strain. And I'm digressing off the topic, but I wanted to show you that in the East, this is how people kind of chill out and chat with their buddies. And this is how they go to the bathroom. Me and my wife went to Malaysia 2 years ago, and the bathrooms have a toilet here and a hole in the ground with a little hose. You can't really see if there's a little hose right there. And that's pretty scary for my wife, who has never been out of the country to see. So one thing I wanted to mention, and the reason why I put this slide in here, is because in Western societies, we typically tear up the anterior superior labrum because of our daily activities and the way that we do squats and sports. But in the East, they typically tear up the superior posterior labrum. They get those types of tears. We don't see that nearly as much in the Western cultures. But I thought it was interesting to kind of put it in there. So we all know good squatting mechanics, keep the knees over the toes. We don't want to let those knees kind of drop in. I mean, basically, you're pretty much performing a faders exam on yourself here because you're getting hip adduction, flexion, and internal rotation. You're just going to put that labrum in a bad compromised position. This guy's got excessive hip flexion. He's gonna really beat up the superior part of the acetabulum and the labrum. And we know people with hyperlordotic postures, this is going to go ahead and rotate their pelvis anteriorly. It's going to put them in a predicament when they're trying to squat. They're going to go ahead and put that anterior labrum into more of a compromised position. How many of you guys have seen this picture? It's kind of circulating out on the internet. You guys know who this is, right? RG3 from his rookie combine picture. Look at those knees. This is his vertical leap test. This guy was one of the top high school athletes in the country. Obviously, he won the Heisman Trophy before he did this. But his hips are completely adducted and internally rotated. His glutes must be very weak. Or he's just compensated and done this because he's already had one ACL reconstruction before this that Dr. Addix did. And then we all know what happened in the NFC wildcard game that year. I mean, if somebody would have just seen that picture and really talked to him, whoop, you saw that knee go, right? There went the ACL, And LCL, just watch that knee. It's got a brace on it because the week before he actually hurt the LCL and he thought that he was okay to play. And he didn't listen to the doctors and he put his helmet back on and went back in the game. But that really doesn't have much to do with the labrum, but I just wanted to show you guys how these athletes can present and what can do for you. Kawhi Leonard, defensive player of the year this year. Look at his stance. It's really good and strong. Nice upright posture. Knees are a little bit in, but he's a really good defender. Won that title this year because he has good mechanics. Ed Reed, before he came to the Texans and took about $5 million from us. Look at those knees. Turned in. I mean, he's a really good defensive player. Probably going to be a Hall of Famer. But he actually had a labral pathology that he had to go to Bell, Colorado and have a labral repair done on before he came to the Texans. These are two of the best soccer players in the world, and they have great mechanics. And I just wanted to show you that the plant leg internally rotates as you're swinging that leg through. There's a lot of forces going through that plant leg. So our soccer players, when they complain of these things, and if they have some sort of hip pathology, the research says, if they're not going to have surgery, we should put them in a different position. Put them in defense instead of an attacking position so that they don't have to do as many of these types of kicks. Golfers. This is Jordan Spieth, his front leg. Obviously, you can see how much internal rotation. Just look at the torque going through the front of the hip there. So it can be a compromise for our golfers. Our tuck positions for swimmers and divers. This takes a lot of hip flexion to get in this position. Obviously, I think this guy's in pain. he actually had to compensate and pull his legs out to the side because he couldn't get in that position. Digs, with our volleyball players, to get down in these positions, you need a lot of hip mobility. So this pathology can affect a wider range of athletes. Here, we've got four different positions on the baseball field, all of which are putting the hip in some sort of stress. Albert Pujols, driving those hips forward with this swing, the plant leg of the pitcher, you're going to put a lot of torque on that anterior leg. I know we don't see a lot of hockey players in Texas, but one of the most notorious positions for hip labral pathology is the hockey goalie, and it's believed because of this butterfly save that they do, or at least it was believed, because they're internally rotating both hips, laying down on the ground, and they're trying to cover as much space in that goal as they can so that puck doesn't get through. But there was actually a study done earlier this year on between these two motions, which one actually gave you more hip peak torque on the internal rotation. And Whiteside in 2015 took 14 college and professional hockey players, had them do different maneuvers like a butterfly save, a recovery movement, and skating techniques. And the butterfly technique did not give the greatest range of hip motion. It was actually the deceleration during skating. So basically shaving the blade of their skate across the ice when they're coming to a stopping motion. It put 54% greater internal rotation magnitude versus that butterfly slide. So now they believe, since it's not that position that puts them in, it's the repetitive end range internal rotation that's putting these goalies at risk for having this type of injury. All right, quickly let's keep moving on to things that can cause FAI, other things such as muscle and capsule. So many of you may have heard of jaundice cross-body syndrome, where you have an anteriorly rotated pelvis, and you have weakness of your abs and your glutes, and you have tightness of the hip flexors and the rectus fine, or you could have posterior capsular tightness, such as the lateral rotators of the hip, and weakness of them as well. So that cross-body syndrome is basically saying, with somebody with anterior tilt, the muscles on the upper back, or upper left portion of this, if you make a cross through here, the upper portion here is going to be tight, as well as the rectus femoris is going to be tight, and then the iliopsoas, so your rectus abdominis and your glutes, glute maximus and hamstrings are going to be weaker. So somebody who can posterior pelvic tilt or has good position here, you're going to have improved lumbar spine, rectus abdominis is working, glute max and hamstring muscle are able to fire completely. So let's skip the rest of the muscles and kind of just talk about the lateral rotators. So I compared in this slide the hip versus the shoulder. So you can see how the rotator cuff is really similar to how the lateral rotators of the hip look. So we have six main lateral rotators of the hip, the piriformis, the superior and inferior glomellus, obturator externus and internus, and the quadratus femoris. So, and I'll touch on those and why those are important in just a second. Check out this slide. If somebody's laying supine and they try to lift their leg up, this is good rectus abdominis control. They get a good rectus femoris is firing. They're able to get that leg off the ground. If you don't have this ab control, you get this lumbar lordosis, and it gives it. You need a greater effort to get that leg off the ground, and you're going to put your lumbar and your back in a compromised position. And there was actually a study done in 2015 by Ross, and they wanted to determine what does the back look like when you X-ray them in supine versus when they're standing. And so this is important for the pelvis because if the lumbar spine is in a hyperlordosis, it means that their hips are actually rotated forward. And so they did CT scans on 50 patients with 50 hips who had 50 arthroscopic surgery treatments, and they knew that they had FAI already. So when they changed them from supine to standing, their X-rays showed that they got 3 degrees more flexion, as well as an increased internal rotation and 90 degrees of flexion, and their fader was actually improved. So we know this, when we put patients with back pain on a table on their back, it always feels better to bend their knees, because when they're laying flat, they arch their back. So this is going to play in part with our hips as well. The same authors, a year earlier, wanted to determine the effects of changing the pelvic tilt and what that does to range of motion. We kind of just talked about it the slide before, but they basically took 48 patients with 50 hips who had the same arthroscopic procedure, and they know that they had labral pathology, and they simulated their movement with 3D, some sort of a simulation, 3D models, so that they can manipulate the pelvis into an anterior tilt, a native tilt, and a posterior tilt, and they wanted to see what happened with their hip range motion. Well, when they tilted the hip anteriorly 10 degrees, they automatically lost 10 degrees of flexion. They had flexion internal rotation at 90, they lost 6 degrees, and internal rotation at 90, and flexion at 15, and 15 degrees abduction, so the fader's position, they lost 8.5 degrees of range of motion. So when you're sitting, you know, we see these high school athletes or these sprinters, they're walking around like this because they got these tight hip abductors, and they got these big booties, and they think it's good because they're athletes. Well, they don't have as much hip range of motion anymore now. So, and then with they put them in the posterior tilt to actually gain range of motion. So it resulted in 10 degrees increased flexion, they got 5 degrees internal rotation, and then they got 7 degrees more of the faders in there. This was the imaging that they got, that they presented in that article, which is pretty cool. If you guys can bear with me, this is a native the pelvic tilt, so your normal pelvic tilt, you can see the anterior rim of the pelvis. Now, when you put somebody in a posterior pelvic tilt, you can appreciate now that you can see a little bit more of that pelvis. So now when they're going to try to flex that hip a little bit more, they got more room. The hood of that socket is now open and they can move. Someone with an anterior tilt, it shuts down the socket, they don't have as much range of motion. These are obvious things now when you see them, but when you're evaluating somebody, you may not come to mind, so I just want to refresh this to you. So we want to think about this as the shoulder impingement of the hip. You've got somebody with shoulder impingement, they got leaning scapula. It's basically what's happening with our anterior tilt guys. So what do we do with these guys? We strengthen the serratus anterior, we start working on cuff for stabilization. So that's why when I'm talking about those lateral rotators of the hip, you want to incorporate those in your strengthening as well. So now what? You found out that they have this FAI, they're not going to have surgery, what are we going to do for them? Well, it's not just like, hey, God, I'm sorry, you got FAI, your labrum's tore up, and you're not going to have surgery, there's nothing I can do for you. It's all relative. We get what we train. The presence of a muscle doesn't mean that muscle is actually functioning properly. And there's no magic in any exercise unless you're getting the desired motion. In all the articles that I was reading, a lot of these patients try conservative management and they fail. And so the doctors will tell them, you know, patients go try some therapy, and what are you going to get out of therapy? According to these doctors, is you're going to decrease inflammation, you're going to walk a little better, you'll gain a little range of motion. But I believe we can do better than that. We're not going to treat the labrum. Obviously, that's the source of pain. We can't treat that. It's, you know, we're not surgeons. We're not going to be able to improve that labral tear. But what we can fix is the mechanical cause of the labral tear. So I like to start with some flexibility. Work on their hip flexors, their rectus femoris, their piriformis, making sure that they're not going into that arched back when they're kneeling. We want to keep that pelvic tucked and really get a good stretch of that hip flexor. Same thing with the rectus femoris as well. Neuromuscular control. If we can control their pelvis, get them out of that tilt, or at least improve their pelvic tilt, then they can, if they can carry that on into their functional activities, they'll feel a lot better. So we got the posterior pelvic tilt here. We got pelvic tilt while they're marching. I'm trying to get them to do two things at the same time. Pelvic tilt while they're internally externally rotating that hip. Some of you guys may be familiar with this or not. I don't know, but we use this in the clinic sometimes. It's just basically an air bladder that we stick under their low back. It has a dial so it can read how much pressure you're putting into it. We pump it up to this red line right here. It's about 40 millimeters of mercury. And we have them do a posterior pelvic tilt with their low back. Put pressure into it. And have them hold that at another mark up here, about 70 millimeters of mercury, and see if they can maintain that. And that way that gives them that visual feedback so they know what they're doing. Sometimes you tell somebody to do something and they don't understand the purpose of the exercise. Here's some hip external rotation exercises, abductors, and core strengthening again, making sure that they're not dropping out of that good alignment. Real quickly, I want to progress somebody from the table into more dynamic and functional exercises. So I just use a dowel in the clinic. I'll have them put that up against 3 points of contact, the back of the head, the shoulders, and the sacrum, making sure that they maintain all 3 points. And sometimes I'll even have them kind of slide their hand on the slope of their back to make sure that they're holding the stick and they can feel their back in between there so that they don't lose a better position. I don't want them getting that hyperlordotic position. And then I'll have them do some squatting or some hip hinging or a single leg deadlift or a lunge. And you can get creative with this and do lateral band walking and those types of things. So pearls to take home with you. FAI can be due to bone inversion, muscle capsular tightness, or a pelvic position dysfunction. It's basically the shoulder impingement of the hip. And Craig's test is a good way to kind of get an idea of if they have some antiversion or excessive antiversion. And then teaching and strengthening pelvic control will allow the pelvis to accept the femur more readily. And I want to thank you guys.